It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Audie Cornish. For 40 years, the gray wolf has been on the endangered species list. Now the federal government wants to remove its protected status across the lower 48 states. And that has stirred deep emotions. In much of the West, wolves are a polarizing political issue. NPR's Nathan Rott spent several weeks in Montana, where the animals are no longer listed. He has a story about the complex relationship between humans and the predator they respect and fear.
Stand with me on the Grand Loop Road in Yellowstone National Park. We're at Hell Roaring Overlook, a high break in the pines. It's a Thursday morning, clear and crisp, and there's an excitement in the air that's as thick as the smell of coffee. Getting closer to where Rick McIntyre is clasping his thermos and a spotting scope, and you'll see what all the buzz is about.
You want to take a look, you'll see a black and a gray that are gathered around the site.
Oh yeah, there's the other one. A black and a gray walking around.
It's a pack of gray wolves and a grizzly bear feeding on what looks like an elk carcass. To the naked eye, they're just kind of dark specks on the opposite slope.
I mean, how far would you say that is?
Oh, maybe 2-3 miles, something like that.
Wow.
I have a tape measure. I can give you one end and you can
start going.
Yellowstone National Park, where McIntyre works, has become one of, if not the, best place in the world to watch wolves. There are a couple dozen people here, shivering with cold, or maybe it's just the excitement. It's a magical thing, seeing a wolf in the wild. Wolf watcher Kim Beam says it best.
It's like being a kid again.
Watching them move.
And there are grays walking to the left now.
Correct.
Seeing them play.
Chasing birds around. It's like bored puppies, you know.
Hearing them howl. It's even more special when you think that just a few decades ago, most scientists say there were less than 50 gray wolves left in the lower United States. They had been hunted, trapped, and poisoned until their howls were nearly gone. And then they were brought back.
Wolves went from being scapegoat underdog to being the environmental movement poster animal.
That's Doug Smith. He's a biologist and the head of the Yellowstone Wolf Project. He was there in the mid-1990s when the federal government reintroduced gray wolves to the Northern Rockies, 66 animals in total. Today, there are about 1,700 wolves in Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho.
People are saying that the restoration of wolves to the Yellowstone area and central Idaho is America's most significant wildlife conservation accomplishment in the 20th century.
And that's one way of looking at it. Here is another.
You know, we just got these wolves shoved down our throat.
That is Bill Hoppe, a rancher and a hunting outfitter. And that is an opinion you don't often hear in Yellowstone National Park. Outside of the park, where about 95% of wolves actually live, they coexist with people. And people have differing opinions. Doug Smith says it's become something of a culture war.
Some people like to refer to it as the abortion issue in wildlife management is wolves. It's intractable. It's polarized. It's value-laden.
I know this because I grew up here in Montana. I've seen the bumper stickers, preserve a wolf, take it to your local taxidermist, howl more, whine less. I've heard some people say that wolves heal our forests, and then another person in the same bar say the best way to manage wolves is to shoot, shovel, and shut up. Now, the silent majority isn't that extreme. Most people are somewhere in the middle. But it's hard to understate just how divisive this issue can be. Don't believe me? Come with me to a coffee shop in Gardner, Montana.
You can't be neutral in anybody's mind. It's like you have to be a side.
That's Kara Cunningham, the barista and a junior in high school here. She and a customer, Luis Kyle, are trying to explain why the word wolf gets whispered in town.
If you like say, oh, I like wolves, then someone that doesn't would be like, oh, well then I have no respect for you. There's like no
respect.
Nothing else.
Respect goes right down.
Don't you think that's a little crazy? I mean, it's
yeah,
it's
you
a
step
it's
back,
a wolf.
You step back, but it's most issues get polarized, left or right, from union help to national health care to the wolves, and then you can't stay out of it. It's like a current.
Would one of you mind reading it?
Okay.
I don't care what it says.
This is Bill Hoppe again, and his wife Peggy. She's at the computer.
It is no longer the wolves you have to worry about. We are watching you. Mm-hmm. I hope your cabin's burned
the
down.
The Hoppies have gotten a lot of emails like this. Letters and phone calls, too.
Yeah.
Scary ones.
I will pray your family suffers terribly every night for the rest of my life.
What did they do to bring on this hatred? Two mornings later, about 5 miles north of town, Bill Hoppy meets me at a spot next to the Yellowstone River to show me. Hoppy tucks his hands into the frayed pockets of his canvas coat and starts walking through the tall grass, describing a morning a few months before.
Then I walk over the bank, and I could see sheep laying dead there, and then there were sheep laying dead all the way clear to the other end. There was a little lamb about a week old laying right there under that tree trying to die. I had to shoot that one, and then I found another one down there I had to shoot.
Biologists from Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks confirmed it. Wolves killed 13 of Bill Hoppy's sheep. And in Montana, where wolves have already been delisted and are managed by the state, state law says you can kill a wolf that's killed your sheep if it comes back on your property. So Hoppy buried a sheep, lambs first, so his grandkids wouldn't see them, and went hunting. Every day, twice a day, until one morning, he found a wolf on his property and shot it.
I did everything by the rules and the law and the regulations that they gave me, and just my luck, it was named Daddy's Girl out of Yellowstone Park.
Daddy's Girl was no normal wolf. She was collared, tracked by biologists, seen by tourists, even followed by fans on Facebook. Hoppy's biggest mistake, he says, is that after he shot it, he let a friend take a picture of it with a dead wolf.
And he put it on Twitter or Twitter or Facebook page or whatever the heck, and it went around the world in about 30 minutes, and that was the start of it.
I had school teachers in L.A., writing me and all their little kids about how they hated me.
This is Sue Johnson. She lives a few twisty miles up a dirt road from the Hoppy's family home. She shot a wolf too, a black one, charcoal black with yellow eyes. It's laying across the entertainment center in front of us, stuffed on a display over a flat screen TV and two empty gun cases.
She was number 5, I think, or something. Oh my gosh, people, she honestly was their pet, their life. Every day they check on the computer to see where she was. And they hated me.
Sue Johnson, Bill Hoppy, and many other outfitters and ranchers I spoke to say people just don't understand. Wolves are killers, and they need to be managed aggressively. Montana's legislature agrees. Hunters can now kill up to 5 wolves every season in Montana. Licenses just cost $19 a pop. Wolf advocates say that's too aggressive and worry that if wolves are delisted nationally, other states will follow suit. Hunters and state officials point out, though, that through 3 years of wolf hunts in Montana, the population really hasn't seen that much change. For them, that's still too many wolves, and wolves are bad for business. But drive back down the mountain into Gardner, and you'll hear another view altogether. Wolves are business.
The wolves have created a big motivation for people to visit our areas, and so they're valuable economically.
This is Nathan Varley. He's a biologist and the co-owner of a wolf-watching guide company with his wife.
And, of course, they have to stay alive to be valuable.
Do you understand where some of the animosity and anger comes from the other side?
I definitely see the arguments as valid for people that don't like wolves. They're real.
What's also real? The depth of emotions people feel for these animals. On a Saturday morning, a few dozen people have gathered just below the Roosevelt Arch in Gardner for what amounts to a funeral. A wolf funeral.
Now is the time to celebrate their lives. Some stolen from us, and others lived out naturally.
Leo Leckie chokes up as he speaks to the crowd. They're here to remember Yellowstone wolves that have died in the last year, like Daddy's Girl, or Canyon Pack 831F.
Blacktail 829F.
Snake River 793.
Curious Elk gaze down from a hill above.
Madison Pack 762M.
Everyone here is pro-wolf, or a wolf advocate like Kat Brecken.
For me to sit back and not do anything about the injustices that I was seeing surrounding the wolf issue, I just couldn't do it anymore. It was against the grain of my soul.
Brecken points to the way that wolves were delisted in Montana as one of the top injustices because, she says, it was political. Let me explain. It came on a congressional budget rider in 2011 and was the first time the U.S. Congress has ever delisted an animal from the endangered species list. Brecken says that the proposal to delist gray wolves nationally would be another politically driven injustice. Wolves used to roam many parts of the U.S. that still don't have them, places like Colorado, California, and Utah. Without federal protection, she says, they'll never get there. And she'd argue that the science is on her side.
And to have politics derail what science already said no to is not acceptable.
But what is the science?
What are their names?
Buster and Boo.
In Montana's Bitterroot Valley, on a windy ridge near the Montana-Idaho border, I meet up with Ben Jimenez. He's a biologist with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and he's got his two dogs with him. Wolves are one of the most studied animals on Earth. Jimenez is adding to that collection by looking at one aspect of the wolf debate. Are wolves really to blame for declining elk populations in some of the state's best hunting grounds? To answer that, we have to find a dead elk.
So that's it.
That's it.
It smells like a dead animal.
It does, doesn't it?
The goal is to see what killed the animal. Jimenez puts on bright purple medical gloves.
Here's the stomach and everything, pretty much untouched.
This is like wildlife CSI. He grabs a torn piece of skin and fur near the animal's neck.
So like here we have holes, but what we're looking for is what's called subcutaneous hemorrhaging. So it's basically bruising. So if you find bruising under the skin, it means that whatever caused that wound or when it happened, the blood was still circulating.
By putting together clues like that, where the first bites happen, what parts of the animal are eaten, and what the scene looks like, Jimenez can usually get a pretty good sense of what killed the animal. And for this one?
All signs point to cat.
Cat, or mountain lion, which he says isn't much of a surprise. Throughout the study, mountain lions have accounted for about 30% of the calf mortality. The big bad wolves, around 5%. So why then do so many people blame wolves?
So the thing about wolves that you always have to remind yourself, it really has nothing to do with wolves.
This is Ed Bangs. He's retired now, but he was in charge of wolf recovery in the Northern Rockies after reintroduction for U.S. Fish and Game.
Everybody that's fighting for some issue tries to put it on the back of the wolf, whether it's animal rights issues, whether it's public land grazing issues, whether it's the loss of family values. And people do that with a religion. They do it with sports teams. They do it with flags. Wolves are one of those issues.
Sobang says the debate over wolves will never completely go away. And he says the same is true of the animal. No matter what happens with national delisting or hunting quotas, Bang says wolves are here to stay, at least in places like the Northern Rockies. So their side of the story is pretty boring. It's the human side. That's interesting. Nathan Rott, NPR News.